Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Bob Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with the Partnership for Quality Home Healthcare's Joanne Cunningham, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business, spends less time on paperwork, and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. The patient-driven groupings model is fast approaching, literally just days away as we move closer toward January 1st, 2020. For a year-end update and final PDGM status report, HHCN caught up with Joanne Cunningham, who heads the Partnership for Quality Home Healthcare. During the conversation, we also touched on the RAP phase-out, the partnership's goals for next year, the patient-driven payment model that's a similar overhaul that's in the SNF space, and more. We hope you enjoy this final Disrupt conversation of 2019, and hopefully we'll catch all you listeners again in 2020. I'm on the line now with the Partnership for Quality Home Healthcare's Joanne Cunningham, who leads the organization as its executive director. Joanne, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm glad we can finally connect and coordinate a time to get you on the podcast. I know it's been a very, very busy year for you.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for having me.
So we're obviously at this point just days away from PDGM going live. That'll definitely be a focus of this conversation. But before we dive into, you know, the latest news on PDGM, can you just kind of give me your high-level thoughts on 2019 overall from the partnership's perspective?
Sure. I would say 2019 was a successful year for the partnership in that we were successful in highlighting our significant concerns with PDGM and generated a lot of interest in legislation and, you know, CMS engagement on trying to make PDGM better. And, you know, I also would say very importantly that the partnership and its members worked very, very collaboratively with the National Association of Home Care and Hospice. And I think it was a true model of working together to achieve a very specific outcome and goal, which was to highlight some of the big concerns and issues with our new payment system.
Yeah, we talk so much about, you know, breaking down silos in healthcare. And I feel like from an advocacy perspective, we almost have to do that just because there's so much going on. Everybody's got to be kind of pulling on the same end of the rope.
Right, exactly.
All right. Well, from an outsider's perspective, you know, somebody who's not actually a provider in this space, it felt like a crazy year in terms of regulatory twists and turns. How would you rank 2019, generally speaking? You know, was it as expected, kind of crazier than expected?
I would not say it was crazier than expected. I think there's always twists and turns with, you know, any kind of policy initiatives that, you know, are sort of the focus. I think, you know, it kind of felt like that perhaps because, you know, the home health community was looking down at the, you know, the barrel of a very significant new policy change. And there was a lot of anticipation of that. There was trepidation. And remember, it came on the heels of, you know, the sort of first try of payment reform for the home health sector, which was the, you know, HHGM kind of first go around. So, you know, the next iteration of that PDGM was, you know, an effort, I think, you know, to improve upon it from the standpoint of CMS. But, you know, we obviously had some strong feelings about even more distance to travel for, you know, making sure that this payment model, which now is imminently going to be, you know, put into place January 1, you know, we wanted to make sure that above all, we get it right. So, you know, I would certainly say it was a really active, very at times intense kind of year. But, you know, I also think that we saw a lot of really good traction from key places about that reflected our concerns that, you know, folks that really wanted to take a breath, make some changes, understood that this was really, really important and we needed to make sure we get it right.
So along those lines of getting it right, I know if my memory is serving me correct here, the initial version of PDGM from last year, you know, included a behavioral adjustment around the 6% mark. That eventually went up in an update to, I think, 8.01%. And then in the most recent finalized version from this October, dropped back down to, was it 4.36%?
Yes.
Do you think that CMS ultimately got PDGM right? Is the partnership generally pleased with, you know, how things turned out?
Well, here's what I would say about that. I'm not sure they got it completely right. And I guess in later comments, I could talk through some of the, you know, maybe unintended consequences that may be of concern, you know, in 2020. But what we saw was, you know, the final rule being certainly a big step in the right direction. I certainly think that any kind of behavioral assumption-based rate cuts, you know, are really concerning. And the argument of, you know, waiting to see what the data yielded is certainly something that the partnership still believes. But we saw the final rule certainly being a step in the right direction, a big, you know, a big improvement. You know, whether we think PDGM is, you know, ready for prime time January 1, that's a whole different issue. And whether or not we think the almost 4.5% cut is a good thing, I certainly would not want to communicate that we think that's the case. But I think we saw it as a good step toward a better direction.
So you mentioned unintended consequences of PDGM. You know, to me, that sounds like we might be talking about overcorrections with therapy. I know with PDPM, we've heard talks about some SNF organizations laying off hundreds of physical or occupational therapists. Could you just tell me a little bit more about those, some of those possible unintended consequences?
Yeah, I think that 2020 is going to be a really, really important year because we're going to have to carefully understand and pay attention to what system changes have occurred because of PDGM. You know, I think the obvious ones are whether or not, you know, CMS's view that home health was over-therapied is correct, or whether or not they went too far and de-emphasizing, you know, therapy in the payment system. I think we're going to be looking at a lot of things, though. And, you know, some of my conversations with Hill staff have focused on, you know, there also may be unintended consequences that we're not even contemplating right now, that in a year we will be appreciating at a whole different level. So I think we're going to be paying a lot of attention to how this rollout happened, what hiccups and pitfalls and perhaps things, you know, policy change, system changes occur that aren't good for the home health beneficiary, that aren't good for patient care, that aren't good for access to necessary home health services. And we're going to be making sure that, you know, we advocate that any of those be corrected and fixed.
You know, for providers, like we talked about before, PDGM is no longer months away. We're talking days at this point. Is there anything left to know, or are all the chips kind of on the table and, you know, it's time to go from here on out?
Well, I mean, January 1 is sort of, you know, go time, and providers are going to have to kind of, you know, jump in and make it happen. I don't think that means that the entire system is fully ready to go. I also don't think that means that there aren't going to be issues that come up that we're going to have to be very proactive to make sure, you know, we get them fixed. You know, the partnership has been working with a group of CMS folks with weekly calls for, you know, about a month and a half that have focused on implementation issues that are the partnership kind of operational folks are starting to worry about. And, you know, I would say one of the takeaways there is that this is a big system change, and CMS is a very large organization. There's a lot of different individuals that have different roles in home health. And, you know, some of those folks may not have the same fully, you know, knowledge about PDGM, as do some of the, you know, key policy people. As an example, you know, we have the interaction of the Review Choice Demo program that will be coming online, you know, early in 2020. We have, you know, a significant part of the system that is in Medicare Advantage plans. You know, those teams of people within the structure of CMS are not as connected into the ins and outs of how PDGM is intended to work. So, you know, perhaps, you know, there might be some bumps along the way that touch other parts of the home health system that, you know, we're not fully appreciating that, you know, like I said, there might be hiccups there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, as possibly they could be prepared, but that doesn't mean physicians are. That doesn't mean CMS.
Right.
That doesn't mean the
right.
Medicare administrative contractors are.
Right. And those are different stakeholder audiences that we've, you know, raised kind of concerns about, you know, making sure that all the resources that are available at CMS also, you know, make sure you educate and bring those audiences up to speed, because this is a big, huge system change. And, you know, there's a lot of different stakeholders that are going to be just learning about it. You know, and we want to make sure there's a smoothness there that makes sure that the system doesn't lose a step.
So I'm definitely no expert when it comes to the patient-driven payment model, PDPM, in the skilled nursing world. Mm-hmm. I've been following it kind of from afar by staying tuned to skilled nursing news and the work that my colleagues are doing there. Have you been tracking what's been going on with PDPM in terms of that rollout? Because from what I understand, there have been some hiccups along the way.
Yeah, we have. And the partnership has had a number of discussions with, you know, our counterparts at the association level and, you know, other folks that are knee deep in some of the implementation issues with PDPM. And I would say, you know, their advice to all of us on the home health advocacy side was, you know, make sure that you are very aggressive about raising potential issues that you think might come up, because there have been some hiccups and bumps along the way. I think early on, you know, there were concerns about, you know, even getting paid. You know, those are significant issues that many providers can't go very long, you know, without getting paid. They're, you know, these are organizations that are, you know, serve, you know, vulnerable populations, and, you know, cash flow is a significant challenge always. So, you know, we were hearing some of those issues, but, you know, the advice that we got from some of our counterparts on the skilled nursing side was, you know, stay on top of all of these issues that you are waking up in the middle of the night worrying about, and make sure that you raise them and try to work with all the CMS resources to problem solve ahead of time, because these are important issues and we can't, you know, we're serving a very, very vulnerable population. We cannot afford to lose a step.
This is kind of a tough question, because like you said, we don't even know at this point what some of PDGM's unintended consequences are going to be. We just simply won't know how things shake out until after the new year. But theoretically speaking, if we're talking in January or February, what do you think the early days of PDGM are going to look like, if you could kind of paint that picture?
Well, I think that there's the potential for some of the smaller providers, you know, the providers that have less operational resources to do, you know, planning and, you know, put teams together to make sure that operationally they're ready, clinically they're ready. You know, you may see some of those smaller providers really having a difficult time. You know, I've heard from some of my friends in the state association world, as well as the national association, that, you know, there's always concern that there's a, you know, X percentage of providers out there that are just going to really struggle with a system change like this. So I would suspect that, you know, probably many of those associations, especially the state associations, are going to get a number of, you know, red alert types of calls from organizations, home health agencies that are just not as prepared as they could have been. So I do worry about that. But I also worry about, you know, this is a big model change, and, you know, the best of planning and the best of preparation sometimes, you know, doesn't prepare you for things that are not in your control that may relate to, you know, confusion on the contractor side, confusion, you know, from the stakeholder communities like, you know, hospitals or physician groups or, you know, other kinds of, you know, kind of participants in the home health sector. So, you know, I wouldn't underestimate that, because I think there's probably going to be a lot of bumps along the way, just because the size and shit of this shift is pretty dramatic.
And, you know, you mentioned smaller providers, you mentioned cash flow before. We haven't even discussed the, you know, phase out of requests for anticipated payment,
right,
or RAPs. Could you just kind of briefly discuss the impact that could have on the industry?
Well, I think that you have a lot of big things happening at once. You have a big, huge payment model change with PDGM. You have the, you know, review choice demo. You have the RAC phase out. And I do think when you have a lot of big things happening, you know, in the same time frame, they could have an interactive effect that is not a positive one. And I do worry about that. And I worry that, you know, you are going to see some, you know, trouble that comes about because of, you know, too much change at once can be very disconcerting and really destabilizing. So I do worry about that. You know, we've raised a lot of those concerns, you know, just proceed very cautiously. You know, that's why, I mean, one of the arguments on not doing, you know, behavioral assumption rate cuts was, you know, let's see how provider change occurs in a new system. Let's see it without the interactive effect of, you know, a large cut or, you know, the RAP issue, or, you know, let's see how the system changes occur without kind of the simultaneous effect of other big changes. I think, you know, you're going to possibly see a different outcome if you, you know, proceed more cautiously.
And, where I don't want to sit here kind of sounding like PDGM is completely set in stone too, because there's still the chance that it's refined through congressional action, correct?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think one thing that we saw this year was, you know, we have 170 members of the House and Senate that know what PDGM is. They are concerned enough about it that they co-signed a piece of legislation that, you know, has a lot of momentum. And I think that they are certainly going to be paying a lot of attention to, you know, how this system occurs. You know, these are members of Congress who care deeply about the availability of home health to their constituents. They know how important home health services are for, you know, the Medicare population, the frail, elderly. And I think they're going to be paying a lot of attention. And I also think that, you know, next year, if there are issues that need to be addressed from a congressional legislative standpoint, you know, we have a base of support that is already there that is going to be very keenly interested in, you know, how did this payment model change affect patient care? How did it affect the accessibility of services? You know, what are the implications of the changes with respect to therapy? You know, do we see patients going without therapy that need it? Do we see, you know, we haven't talked about the possible implication or unintended consequence with respect to community admissions to home health. You know, is there any unintended consequence with respect to those referrals that has had, you know, other effects in other parts of the system? So I think there's a lot of open questions and a lot of interest in, you know, congressional advocates as well as CMS about, you know, how's this working?
What are some of the other big issues from 2019, you know, that are important to flag and that will probably remain hot topics in 2020?
Okay, sure. I mean, I think there's always lots of challenges and, you know, new initiatives that the home health community is interested in. I know, you know, you have covered lots of them, the non-physician certification for home health services, some of the, you know, initiatives like the review choice demo. We're paying a lot of attention to the post-acute care unified payment model that CMS has been putting a lot of effort and energy into. And, you know, there's a lot of interest in the home health community about what that means. What are the opportunities? How do we position ourselves? How does PDGM affect that or create sort of a, you know, a pathway to a unified system? So we are in 2020 certainly going to be examining that and looking at the data in the home health sector, you know, what types of cost savings there are for home health patients who use services in the, you know, in the home versus other sectors, you know, that kind of stuff.
Speaking of, you know, about the unified payment model, we've heard mixed kind of takes on whether that's coming sometime soon, whether that's still, you know, something that's way off on the horizon. Do you have any thoughts on the timing of that and whether, you know, providers should start to be thinking about that even, you know, if it's in the back of their mind?
Well, I think it's definitely something that's going to take a while. I know there was a TEP that just took place at the end of November. And at that TEP, I know they announced there will be two TEP meetings in 2020. I think one in the earlier part of the year and then one later in the year. So, you know, what does that mean for the next step after that? You know, presumably there's going to be a report issued out of that process that will make some recommendations about post-acute care, unified payment, what it should look like, you know, how it should work. And then, you know, that kind of pushes you into 2021 at the earliest. But I do think, you know, that's a really complicated, complex policy endeavor. So I think the more that we understand, you know, different, you know, the implications of different structures, how it could work, you know, how patient care could be positively impacted. You know, the more we sort of contemplate all of those complicated policy issues, I think the better resource we will be to help guide that in a positive direction. So, you know, we're certainly paying a lot of attention to it.
Well, I think that this is a good point to start winding down the conversation. Before we end this episode, could you just talk a little bit about the partnership's plans and goals moving forward?
Sure. Well, the partnership at the end of 2019 is certainly taking stock at the year that we've had. And just to, you know, kind of end where we started out, I think this was a really good year for the home health community. You know, we showed our strengths together as a community, working together to make sure that we, you know, had some pretty proactive policy discussions and advocacy efforts focused on making sure that PDGM was a model that would be, you know, kind of focused on delivering the right things and fixing any potential, you know, issues that we thought we had concerns with. So, you know, I think that was a really good highlight of the year, I think, is just the collaborative work that took place and really the great reception and wonderful support we had from our congressional advocates. And CMS really stepped up and listened to us to, you know, make a change that we thought was really important and, you know, and took a big step in the right direction. But I think next year, the implementation of PDGM is crucial, and there are going to be issues that come up. There are going to be problems that we will need to solve, and we will do that from a base of making sure that we're offering, you know, really proactive, you know, forward-thinking guidance and ideas. You know, here's the problem. Here's how we think you should fix it. But I think that's going to have to happen, and I am pretty certain that there's going to be bumps and hiccups along the way that might be big ones or might be small ones. But, you know, our focus is going to be solving them and making sure that any unintended consequences are fixed and highlighted and making sure that we do get it right.
That was Joanne Cunningham from the Partnership for Quality Home Healthcare. Joanne, thanks for all the wonderful insights and for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Bob Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.